The Lord be with you. Our reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. It was very early on the first day of the week and still dark when Mary of Magdala came to the tomb. She saw that the stone had been moved away from the tomb and came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved. "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb," she said, "and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter set out with the other disciple to go to the tomb. They ran together, but the other disciple, running faster than Peter, reached the tomb first. He bent down and saw the linen cloths lying on the ground, but he did not go in. Simon Peter, who was following, now came up, went right into the tomb, saw the linen cloths on the ground, and also the cloth that had been over his head. This was not with the linen cloths, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went in. He saw and he believed. Till this moment, they had failed to understand the teaching of Scripture that he must rise from the dead. This is the gospel of the Lord. Okay. So, how long have you all got? Is the lunch roasting at home? You know, the power of resurrected life starts before death. Resurrection isn't something that happens after death. It begins already now in your lives and mine. This is attested by John in his gospel, for when Jesus is in that awful place, Gethsemane, in that night of suffering, in that night of lonely isolation, into the Garden of Gethsemane come those with cudgels and swords ready to capture him, led by Judas, his friend. And Jesus goes forward to meet them and he says, "Whom do you seek?" And they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he says, "I am he." And what happens then? They fall backwards and fall down. Extraordinary moment. "I am he." This moment echoes that ancient search when one of our race climbed the mountain of Sinai and there spoke with God. "Who are you? How will I tell them about you if I do not know your name? Who shall I say you are?" "I am. I am." God's life in you is not future tense. God's life in you is now, here, today, this precious moment. Resurrected life, therefore, comes through Gethsemane to us. We suffer. I think it's often the way that when you are deprived of something, then you know its value. When you miss something that you've had, then you know what you have lost. When someone leaves your life, then perhaps for the first time, you see all their magnificent individuality. Jesus will go onto the cross, that awful cross, the sign of desolation, the sign of absolute inhumanity and brutality. And he will turn that sign into a sign of hope. In the very moment of loss, there is gain. In the very moment of death, there is life. The fullness of God's love is revealed in Jesus in the garden and Jesus on the cross. In what way? He is powerless. He has to wait. He's in the control of others. How much of our lives, yours and mine, mean that we're not in control? You know, the Easter liturgies, we prepare for them, but it must be pretty obvious to those of you coming over the years that your priest isn't in control. I kind of follow around. Servers go here and there, and I follow them. The musical director indicates a new song, and we sing it. not being in control. How many times in your life, even today, you are not in control of your children? You may control them, but ultimately they retain a freedom which will go beyond your control. You cannot tell them what to think. You cannot ultimately tell them how to behave. You cannot tell them to follow this creed or worship in that church or read that philosophy. Your children will be free. Your children are not in your control. Neither can you control your destiny, your health, the lives of your friends. You cannot tell their span or their length of days. You are not in control of your job nowadays. In the old days, jobs for life, not anymore. Redundancy. You're not in control of the realization of your deepest wishes and deepest longings. So much of our lives mean that we're not in control. It is the ability to enter into that Christ shows us. The ability to be powerless. On the cross, he carries no weapon. On the cross, he is powerless and defenseless and totally nonviolent. Those who come for him with cudgels and swords, he does not meet with a sword of his. Those who insult, he will not insult. Those who kill, he will not pay them back in that coinage. The life of Jesus tells us that not to be in control is part of the human condition. It's part of the human condition. I wasn't very much in control at the first Mass when I missed my step and came falling, crashing to the ground. Several people rush forward. Now, in a moment like that, you'd like to kind of have a short list of people that you wish would gather you up. I mean, if I am to die, I'd like to have a short list of those in whose arms I'd like to die. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I'm not even in control of that. Somebody else will rush forward, and the last sight I might have on earth might be the face of somebody that I don't particularly like. Who knows? Who knows? But so we're not in control. I don't think I fell. It was more a subsidence. Do you know what I mean? Right. So we're not in control. And that doesn't mean that we just always try to act, but we try to wait. We're not very good at that in this culture. Trolley rage, road rage, every kind of rage. The drumming of the fingers on the driving wheel, waiting for the red light to change. The frenzied impotence of people who are asked to wait. In our parish, in this parish, all forms of ministry are really forms of waiting. Waiting for that perfect note in music, waiting for that time when the ministers of the Eucharist will go to bring the body of the Lord to those who are housebound. You don't rush in looking at your watch. I can give you 3 minutes. No minister in this parish will do that. You go to the person to wait on them, to serve them, to be part of their lives for a brief moment, but to bring yourself to them and to bring the Lord to them. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is the resurrection of the body. If it is a spiritual exercise, then it is meaningless. Our bodies are meant for more than now. Our lives cannot be measured in the minutes of our days. The most profound basis for the sacredness of human flesh is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I know people can break through to a reverence for one another. But I am saying to you that here, those who are Christian base their belief in the sacredness of life on the fact that Christ's body is risen from the dead. This is the most powerful argument for reverencing all forms of life. And I've been thinking through this, and I know I used some of these ideas last night. They bear repeating. I'm just thinking, you who live in Cornwall, or you who traveled down to Penzance in the last few days, you probably came on the A30. And I am deeply moved by the fact that if you take the ministry of the women, Christian women in Cornwall, all you have to do is come slowly down the A30, pause at Bodmin. There is a hospice for those who have HIV and AIDS. Here is a place of welcome, a place of nurture, where they understand the regime of drugs that are necessary, where they understand the sometimes awful pain and isolation of those who carry this virus in their body. Here is a place where there's no judgment. Here is a place of welcome. Here is a place of reverence for them. And then travel further down the A30 and turn to the right at Hale. And you will find that many decades ago, the Daughters of the Cross set up St. Michael's Hospital. And then in recent times, they established St. Julius Hospice. What is the hospice except the living out of that which Scripture says? Why do you look for the living among the dead? Rather, why don't you find life even in the moment of death? I quoted last night Dame Cecily Saunders, who is attributed with founding the hospice movement here in Britain. And her dictum is, you are alive till the very moment of your death. Let's face it, you and I know people who are half dead half their lives. Yes, maybe there are days you go through it like that. I was preaching this morning, giving my all, and I heard a woman 3 seats away go, oh dear, I wanted to say, bless you, my child. No, I did not. I wanted to. So, to be alive, to rejoice in every moment where you can look left and right into the smiling eyes of another person, to see your child, to see your parent, to see your friend. These are precious moments, and the hospice movement reveres that, knowing that in the very moment of death, much work has to be done. Reconciling work, perhaps. Forgiveness, perhaps. The resolution, the tying up of all those strands of life that we never got around to merging into a pattern. And then the help that we give to the aged and the care we give to our children. Now, all of these happened. You come down to Penzance, and the Sisters of the Presentation, as they saw their time in education coming to an end, they set up just behind us here a place of haven. It's a lovely title. The haven, out of the ways of the sea, out of the storms of life, there is a place for those last years where you will be surrounded by respect, by care, by love. And every day, a bus bearing the name of St. Mary's Haven goes around this area, collecting those who live alone and bringing them to a day care center. And this is not a place where they just slap down a cup of tea, half of it spilling into the saucer. This is a place where people know their names, where people matter, where if they're not present, they are missed. That's what we're about. Now, all of this was done many years ago. What will this generation do to show it believes in the sacredness of life? What will you and I do in our time so that another priest 30, 40 years from now will be able to say, look, this was a manifestation in their belief in resurrection. This was a sign. Will we, for example, make sure that the creation of refuges for battered wives is no longer necessary in our land? Will we again assure that old people can walk the streets of Penzance any time of the 24 hours that they wish? Will we again assure that our children can go and play in our public parks and in the fields around our towns without fear of molestation, free from the predations of people who would abuse their innocence? I can remember doing this. Some of you who are my age will remember. We roamed the fields. We came home when the sun went down, when hunger gnawed in our tummies. We did not fear, we did not grow up in fear. What is the point of having a free Britain if the aged are not free to walk the streets and our children are not free to play with their friends? There's a task: to restore trust, to restore protection, to restore reverence for every aspect of life. The Christians of the early church moved away from the moment of fear and entered life again. Jesus came to meet them. "Have no fear," he says, "I am with you." They then translated that into prayer and into practice. They then translated that into contemplation and into action. We must do the same.